It's tax season, and American taxpayers face the compulsory yearly exercise of preparing their tax returns. This year, there are tax code changes for medical deductions, high earners, and same-sex partners. And it's not too early to make changes now that can make a big difference for next year's tax season. I'm Susan Wilson, and today we'll get advice from the Cash Money Crew about this year's return and how to demystify the complex maze of tax laws that affect you. Later, we'll discuss how retirement income expectations have changed and how some retirees are working longer than they expected. We'll talk about what you need to know to be prepared for a contented retirement, this and more after this hour's news. As tax preparers gear up for the tax season, harried taxpayers are getting ready to file their returns. With the complexity of the IRS code, plus yearly changes to tax law, the taxpaying public approaches this task with some trepidation. Not to worry, today the Cash Money Crew will be discussing some of the key changes to be aware of when you file your 2013 return. And we'll also offer some tips to better position yourself for 2014. Later in the show, we'll talk about how the economy and living longer has affected your post-work income. We'll discuss how being prepared is more important than ever and is adjusting to the changing realities of retirement. This is Central Standard, and I'm Susan Wilson. Joining us today is Alex Petrovic, Sandy Weaver, and David Jackson, otherwise known as the Cash Money Crew, who will be sharing their experiences and expertise on taxes and retirement. Welcome all.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
First, I'd like to open it up to our listeners and just ask, what questions do you have about filing your taxes this year? Call us at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. Or email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Now, just to kick off this discussion about taxes, everyone's favorite subject, I'd like to ask you, what are the most common tax filing issues or challenges that taxpayers face? And I guess, Sandy, I'll ask you that question.
I think one of the most challenging things the average Joe faces is he gets this organizer from the CPA, and he has to go through and gather up his records, and he misses things. He doesn't realize that he might be able to get a deduction for having a home office. We had a client that contributed to a health savings account, and we knew that, but I didn't see it on the tax return when I was reviewing it. So either the CPA missed it, or it could have been that our client simply didn't recognize that that's what was being asked for and didn't send back that information. If you don't tell your CPA that you did something, you can't get a deduction for it.
And how about you, David?
Well, you know, one of the things I would say, people sometimes mix up getting a tax refund with paying the least amount possible on their taxes. If they get a nice refund, they're thinking, oh, I did good. Well, you know, if you maybe sheltered some of your money, you could have ended up paying a whole lot less in taxes. And that's the real game that you're trying to do, is minimize your taxes as much as possible.
But some would say there are fewer and fewer shelters that people have, particularly at certain income levels.
Now, that is true, but I'm just making a point that a lot of people mix up the two issues. How much are you paying in taxes versus how much are you getting in a refund? And those are two totally different subjects.
And Alex, what about you? What do you see as the most common issue?
The first thing is understanding whether or not you qualify for, you know, deductions or not, or if you're just going to take the standard deduction. And if you think you're able to take, you know, itemized deductions, then I think Sandy's point is really, really important, is knowing what those items are that you can, you know, prepare to give to your tax person. And what we often hear, too, is people are, you know, everybody's trying to save money. And sometimes spending that money with a CPA professional is the best way to go. If you have any doubt at all about your abilities to file your own taxes, if you have those doubts, don't do it.
Well, I have those doubts, and that's why I use a preparer personally, so... So let's talk about some of the major changes that affect 2013 returns. Now, we talked earlier, Sandy, about home offices, and it seems this year things are simplified in terms of claiming a home office deduction. Tell us about that.
You can claim a deduction for $5 per square foot up to 300 square feet. But you still have to meet the definition of a home office, which is exclusive use. And it's still a miscellaneous itemized deduction, which means you can only deduct the amount that's over 2% of your adjusted gross income.
But what makes it simplified? I guess I'm not sure. Is it that calculation that you're talking about?
Yes. Before, you had to prorate the direct expenses and the indirect expenses. So, for example, you went prorate a portion of your heating bill and your air conditioning bill and your water bill and your mortgage. And
so now it's just a flat rate.
Yes.
Now, when you say exclusive use, what does that mean?
You don't use it for anything else. So if you have a spare bedroom and you're using it as your office in your home, if your mom and dad come to visit, you can't park them there.
Aha, uh-huh, because they're not part of the business use.
That's right.
That'd be a pretty tough audit, wouldn't it?
That would be a real tough audit. So there's a new clause that allows same-sex couples to file married and joint returns, but there's a caveat here for the state of Missouri, isn't there, David?
Well, my understanding is on the federal returns, you know, you do get that exemption if the state recognizes it. I guess I should let you take that one.
Yeah, that's how I understand it as well. You know, the Department of Justice and so forth have helped same-sex couples in terms of their federal returns. But the state returns is different. So you might be able to file a federal joint account, joint return, but not a state return.
And it really depends on whether the state recognizes marriage or recognizes tax exemptions for same-sex couples. Which one?
Well, that's a good question. I know the federal government kind of bypassed that in the Supreme Court ruling. You know, they didn't necessarily recognize same-sex couples, but the ability to file and to be treated more fairly in terms of the tax code.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's one that I think I'm mystified by, and I think most Americans are, even understanding what it is, the alternative minimum tax, which sometimes can pop up unexpectedly for the unsuspecting taxpayer. But there's something new this year, Sandy, about this much-hated alternative minimum tax. What is it?
It's that that exemption was made permanent, and now it's indexed for inflation. Because one of the problems with AMT is that it's really hitting the middle class now. It doesn't hit the lower income that much, and it doesn't hit the upper income that much because their taxes under the regular system are high enough.
So AMT is an alternative minimum tax, and wasn't it originally a tax for the rich, not the middle class?
Indeed, it was. It was. But it for middle-income America now, it adds back certain deductions, so your income goes up, and then it says 26-28% of that, are you paying at that tax rate? And if you're not, it adds on. And so the average tax bill is $6,600.
So are you saying that if you are middle class, you'll fare better with this new arrangement or worse?
Worse. It will tack on an extra $6,000 to your tax bill.
The other problem was, though, excuse me, David.
Go ahead.
Well, is that there was always that uncertainty how it was going to be treated from year to year. It was a political thing. So you didn't know if they were going to extend it or raise it or whatever from year to year. And at least what they have done up on Capitol Hill is to establish a real base that we can work with. At least you know from year to year what you're up against.
But, you know, with all the published reports about the middle class and, you know, wages dropping, this really doesn't seem like it's a good idea in terms of tax law.
I would agree. The only thing, most people don't even know that they are paying AMT. You have to go to the second page of your 1040 form, and it's about, 12, 15 lines down. But honest to God, how many people look at their tax return when they get it from their CPA and go look at that page 2? They don't even realize they're paying it.
Yeah, so the original idea probably was a good intent, and that was that they didn't want wealthy high-income earners to use all these tax deductions to not have to pay any taxes. But Congress failed to keep up with the inflation rate or the cost of living, and so it really came down to where it started affecting ordinary, you know, middle-class citizens. And so now at least they put that patch in there where it's going to index for inflation and continue to rise, so it's not capturing as many people as it otherwise would.
Oh, so there may be less middle-income people who are affected.
That
maybe
is the intent.
Okay. That's good to know. You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on kcur.org. I'm Susan Wilson. We're talking to the Cash Money crew today with Alex Petrovic, Sandy Jackson, and David Jackson.
No, we didn't get married. It's Sandy Weaver and David Jackson.
David, I like
no
you, but not that way.
Yeah, not like that, huh? My wife would have something to say,
I
too.
I bet.
So. We're discussing what you need to know about trends in preparing for taxes and later on retirement. What questions do you have about filing your taxes, and what challenges are you facing? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Now, there's also, for some taxpayers, personal exemptions are phasing out, I understand. Tell us about that, and who does that specifically affect?
That's not going to impact that many people because it's only those folks earning over $300,000. What they can do is on your itemized deductions and on your personal exemptions, they can clip that back up to a maximum of 20%. But not, you know, not that many people are making over $300,000.
One thing I found interesting this year is that there are tax changes that create another tax bracket that affects high income earners. It's a 39.6 tax bracket. Alex, what do you know about that?
Well, as I understand it, that's for going forward in 2014. The tax law was changed in 2013. So it's another way to try to generate taxable income. So as well as on dividends, qualified dividends and capital gains. But, you know, we had this big debate in Congress last year, and there were some compromises that were made, and some of them, you know, the higher tax people did give up some what amounts to deductions. And that's one of them, is that the new income tax rate's going to go up for a high wage. And it's, you know, we're talking, I think that we're back to that 300,000 area there.
So we have a caller right now. Let's take a call from Brian in Grain Valley. Brian, good morning. Welcome to Central Standard. You have a question.
Good morning. Yes, my father passed away in 2015, and we received some lump sum payments from some annuities he had. I have already taken out the federal taxes before I got it. I was wondering, what's the best way to go? Is a traditional IRA or an IRA Roth?
Well, it depends on what sort of annuities that the father owned, if they were qualified or non-qualified. So first you got to start with that to determine what you can then do with those. If they were non-qualified, that means they were paid with after-tax dollars, then he's going to have some more limited options. He could continue some of the deferred nature of the income. But if they were annuities that were IRAs, qualified contributions, then there's some what he could do with those. First off, they have to go to an IRA, and then they could convert to a Roth. But first, we need to know to be more.
Yeah, well, let's ask the caller. Is this money coming from a retirement plan that your dad had?
These were separate annuities that he had just purchased.
So they were non-qualified?
Yeah, I believe so, yes.
Okay. So then,
and we've
so then,
already received a lump sum payment from them.
Okay, so then you can't really do a rollover. But what you can do is, between a deduct, assuming that you have earned income, you can put $5,500, $6,500 if you're over the age of 50. You can put that into a Roth IRA. That would be more advantageous than a deductible IRA.
He's already had the distributions, that's one thing. If the distributions haven't been made from the annuity company, many benefit, you know, depending on the contract, and that's what we're talking about, the contract with the insurance company, you can defer those, staying in the annuity. But first off, you have to go to the insurance company. But if you've already made those right. distributions and taken and cashed those checks, you know, your deferred now is what Sandy said, just whatever anybody can do in terms of IRAs or Roths.
Yeah. You may have had a five-year option to instead of taking a lump sum, take it over 5 years. That might have been better.
So, you know, you talked about the importance of getting a tax preparer. We have a caller, Lisa, who has a question about rates. Good morning, Lisa. Welcome to Central Standard. And what's your question? Uh-oh, I think we lost her. Let's take Angelica.
Yes, my question is, my husband and I moved here from a different state, and in the past we've done our joint file tax returns with a software, but now we're here. We live in the Kansas side, but he works in the Missouri side. So do we have to file the federal one and then two state ones? And if that's the case, should it be better if we go to an accountant or like H&R Block, or could we still do the taxes on our own?
Sandy Weaver.
You do have to file two states, and I guess this first year I would recommend that you have someone else do it for you just so you can see how it works. But you'll have to file Missouri and pay over there, and then the amount that you pay there gets deducted on your Kansas return.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you for that question. So let's talk about planning. Since 2013 is here, what can we do for next year? I know one common mistake is not withholding enough taxes. David, what do you tell people about withholding and how they get to an accurate number that's going to not leave them liable for more taxes than they should be at the end of the year?
Well, that is the important issue, is and it works both ways, I want to say, too, because sometimes people will get a huge refund, which means they're having too much withheld. And then if you're finding out at the end of the year that you owe, you need to change your deduction so that they're withholding more throughout the year so you don't get this big surprise. But, you know, you do need to look and see when you get to the end of the year if you owe or if you got a refund coming. Okay, well, that's telling you that you need to make an adjustment, because you want to get as close to zero as you can. I mean, and I know a lot of people out there feel like if they're getting a big refund, they did something good, but it's really not, because you've allowed the federal government to hold on to your money all year interest-free. You know, you'd be better off having your own money yourself.
And it's interesting, the people that usually feel good about that also say, well, I would be spending it, and so this is like a savings for me. But your point is well taken. Someone else is earning interest on that money.
Yeah, the federal government's just holding on to it, you know, interest-free. So you'd be better off having your own money. And that's not counting, you know, people who get the earned income credit, tax credit. I'm just talking about.
So our caller, Lisa, is back with us. Good morning, Lisa. Welcome to Central Standard.
Well, good morning. I had a question about tax preparation fees. I have had my taxes prepared, my state, my Missouri state, and my federal. My problem is I have run into being quoted anywhere from $75 clear up to $250. And I don't know if they're gouging me. I don't know if I'm not going to get quality. I'm really confused about what I should be paying just to have, and I do have stocks and things like that, but I don't have a mortgage or any of that. My main thing is my stocks, but I'm really confused about what I should be paying.
That is a really good question, because fees do vary. Alex, what's been your experience with this issue?
Well, one of the issues is if a CPA professional is very credentialed and very current, successful, their charges are going to reflect what, you know, they need to charge for their practice, which may be more than you need, but it's still what they need. So sometimes, you know, you go to a solo or small CPA practitioner, probably get a better rate than if you go to a very large firm. But it's hard to say. You need to ask those questions. You can ask those questions and don't be fearful but somebody charging $75 fee, generally, this is a generalization, but it's probably a smaller solo, and you know, sometimes you do get what you pay for.
are you saying that a lot of the solo practitioners may not have access sometimes to all the updates and the latest information because they are solo and there's only so much you can do and focus on?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that. I think there's great solo practitioners out there. It's just, it's no different than our business. Mm-hmm. Some of us are highly talented. Some of us are run-of-the-mill. And then there's us, many of us in the middle of the pack. And we charge different fees. So we're allowed to do that, and it's certainly fair, but I would ask Lisa just to ask those questions. What experience? Referrals are a great way also, is asking your friends, who does your taxes? Are you happy with them? You've been with them? What are their fees?
Yeah, because some people, you know, their taxes are so simple. They could use that 1040 EZ form and just whip right through it. It's just so simple. And it's like, so why are you paying for that? But then there are other people on the other hand where they have a lot of you know, like this lady has stocks and bonds that she has to account for. It gets a little bit more complicated, and you're going to pay a little bit more the more complicated your tax return is.
Let's take a call from Anita from KCMO. Good morning, Anita. Welcome to Central Standard. You have a question about buying and selling a house.
Yes, I do. I bought a house, a HUD house or foreclosed. I bought it in 2012, and I sold it in 2013. So I am filing that on my 2014 taxes. I guess my question is, do I use a certain schedule, like Schedule A, Schedule E? Do I just put it under capital gains and, you know, answer questions on the capital gains and losses? Or how do I file that?
Good question. Sandy?
You know, I don't know the answer to that one. Real estate has a separate, it gets treated differently for capital gains purposes, and I don't know.
Yeah, and HUD property maybe even more so. So, yeah, definitely reach out to a professional there that does does familiar with that work.
Because you're saying this is kind of a body, it really depends on a lot of factors, and
it
maybe
could.
Some specific guidance here would be good. So what else should people know right now to prepare better for 2014? What, David, what would you be recommending at this point as one key area that people need to pay attention to if they want better results next year?
Well, one of the things you mentioned early on is that a lot of the loopholes have gone away for ordinary people. But one of the things just about everybody can take advantage of is funding a retirement plan and having that money is treated as pre-tax. It reduces your taxable income. So if you do see that you're paying a little bit too much in taxes, you know, funding your retirement plan helps you in two different ways. Not only are you saving for retirement, but you're getting yourself a tax break right now.
How about you, Sandy? What do you recommend people can do? What's the best thing they can do now?
Well, I reiterate what David said, because you can sock more money into a retirement plan, but you can also add in there an IRA or a Roth IRA. And I'd also recommend that you set up, especially if you have problems with cash flow management or budgeting, I'd recommend that you set up, you know, an electronic funds transfer so that gets taken out of your paycheck automatically. We're working with a young doctor out in Colorado, and we're doing the same thing. You know, we're taking it over to his 401k at work, and then the IRA account, you know, gets out of his monthly, and we're even taking some of the paycheck over to a savings account to get built up. And so it sort of squeezes down what's left to spend. And especially if you have a hard time budgeting, that's very helpful. It eases that crunch over the year.
Now, what about, Alex, these health savings accounts? They can be good tax deductions, but then if you don't forecast correctly, you lose that money, right?
No, that's not necessarily the case. Maybe Sandy can answer that one better. I want to come back to the question before, though, but on the health savings, you can use them, you can carry them forward.
Absolutely, yeah.
I did want to add one other thing, though, on the, you know, that you're talking about two types of tax filers that are listening to us. Those that are not able to itemize because they don't have enough itemization items, and then those that can itemize. So the ones that can't, you know, they're taking their standard deductions. There's not many things they can do other than maybe their retirement plans and so forth, that they make those deductions, that they get pre-tax treatment. But then those people that itemize, now we're back to all the little nuances of things that you can do. And record keeping, as we talked about before, is one, the very first one to start. And then those people then that are, you know, that are in upper brackets, you know, they can also look at where they park their non-taxable investments. And they can, you know, use tax-free bonds. They can use annuities and so forth. So I think we have to look at two different sides of our listeners' needs.
Let's take a call from Frank in Lawrence. Good morning, Frank. Welcome to Central Standard.
Good morning. Thanks. Yeah, I have an easy question. I've had two separate jobs with the W-2s that have come in. The one W-2 has income tax, Fed tax, about $400 and some, and the other was a shorter term job, and there was no tax taken out on that W-2 form. Do I have to include that information on the return or leave it out?
Definitely need to include it on the returns, whether they will tell taxes or not. And here's another one I thought I'd bring up because I've seen this happen with the clients where they receive a 1099 that has something to do with maybe some capital gains or dividends that they received on some income off of a stock or a mutual fund. Even if it's a small amount, you need to include that on your tax return because the IRS does not know. They just know you had a 1099. And if they don't see, you know, you reporting that 1099 on your tax return, eventually they're going to come back to you and say, hey, what about that?
And that's the call you don't want to get, right? All right. Thank you for that question. Let's go to Chris in Stillwell. Good morning, Chris. Welcome to Central Standard. You have a question about 401ks.
Well, I do, actually. It maybe relates more to an IRA. I have a regular employment, and I have maxed out my 401k. My wife has she's self-employed. And my question is, can she make a contribution to an IRA in 2014 that would be credited for 2013? I read somewhere that you can make contributions up until the time you file your income tax return to an IRA for the previous, that would be beneficial for the previous year. Is that true?
That's a really good question. Alex?
Well, the self-employed spouse can make contributions to a simplified employed pension, a SEP IRA, regardless of what the husband's income or participation in a 401k. So that'd be the first place for her to look, depending on how much she makes, or just a deductible IRA. So one, we have to know how much she made, self-employed, because the IRA may be better or the simple IRA may be better.
No, she can do both. She can, if she's self-employed, she can put 20% about into a SEP, and then they can both, though, do an IRA.
That's true. Yeah.
And you do have to April 15th of this year to count towards last year, plus extensions.
Oh, you know, and that's something many people may not know, so that's a very good tax tip, because I think many people think if they didn't do it by December 31st, it's too late.
Yeah, it depends on what type of retirement plan, but yes, you can.
But there is a limit on the IRA, though.
Yes.
Which you didn't say, which is if the husband makes too much money, they may not be able to do a spouse IRA.
They can do a non-deductible.
A non-deductible, right. That doesn't help for taxes, though.
No, but the SEP would, the 20%.
Yeah, exactly. So you need to look at both of them. We need to know how much she made in self-employment income.
So just to clarify, if you make too much money in any case with a Roth, it doesn't help you too much on your taxes. Is that correct?
Yeah, if you make too much money, you can't do a Roth. And then if you make too much money, you can't do a deductible IRA.
Now, what's too much money?
Well, I can look it up here.
And let me clarify, too, on the Roth. The Roth is money going in after tax anyway, so it's not going to help you on your immediate tax returns. It helps you with tax-free income later.
Yep, $181K on married, you couldn't, spouse cannot do. That starts to phase out anyway, $181. So.
We're going to take a short break, and when we return, we'll be talking about the changing face of retirement, shifting gears a little bit, and how to prepare for it. Central Standard returns in just a moment. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Susan Wilson. We're hanging out today with the Cash Money crew, Alex Petrovic, Sandy Weaver, and David Jackson. In our second segment, we're shifting gears a little bit, and we'll be talking about the importance of preparing for retirement or considering some mid-course corrections to respond to the changing realities of retirement. Kansas City, what kinds of questions do you have about retirement? And what changes have you had to make in preparing or adjusting to retirement? Call us at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or tweet us at KCURCST. So, just generally, opening this up, David, what's changed about retirement in general in terms of, you know, income sources, activities, how we should be preparing?
Yeah, there's been a seismic shift in how retirement income is generated over the last 30 years. And so you think about our parents' generation and how they would work on the same job for 30 or 40 years. They retire, get the gold watch and a pension that'll be guaranteed to pay them income for the rest of their life. Those plans have just, over the last 30 years, have rapidly declined and been replaced by the 401k type of plan or a defined contribution plan, which basically says, we're not guaranteeing anything as far as income for you. We're just going to help you save for retirement. You figure out what to invest in yourself. And then once you retire, you manage your money yourself to make your money last through retirement years. And so that's a huge shift.
Well, and of course, what that means is with a traditional pension plan, you're paid that money for the rest of your life. Whereas if your 401k savings run out, that's it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Sandy, how about you? What have you seen in terms of this changing face of retirement and preparing for it?
It is a shift of responsibility from corporations over to the individuals. And you don't see defined benefit pensions vary more at, you know, in our practices unless the client works for the government or is covered by a union. Otherwise, you know, you don't see them. They have been switched over rapidly to, you know, cash balance plans. I think Johnson County Community College has, you know, changed their benefits for new hires, I think, 3 times over the last 10 years. So it's a big deal. It changes the responsibility.
Well, the other thing, of course, that's changed is Americans are living longer. I mean, according to the National Center for Health Statistics, life expectancy in 1950 was something like 58, and now it's 79. And, of course, you can hear every day of more and more people living to 100. So how does this change how people should plan for retirement? Alex?
Susan, yeah, that's a great question, and that's the one we're all dealing with individually or in our families as well as in our practices. Hopefully, I think the American public is starting to wake up to the realities of longevity risk, which is the risk of living too long and not being able to support yourself. So the consumptions that we, you know, need to pay for don't stop. So what we're seeing is obviously people working longer, or working part-time jobs after they retire to fund a lack of retirement income. And it's we see it a lot in our practice, and we'll be going to add to that as we go along.
So, David, are you still seeing people who have had to modify their retirement plans based on the recession and how their portfolios took hits, or has that sort of regularized by now?
Well, I don't know if you could say it's regular. I can't even say the word. But anyway, thing, you know, there's a couple of things that have happened. And the recession was a big piece of it because a lot of people out there were forced to retire because of the recession. You know, companies just were cutting back wherever they could. And so, you know, if you didn't have enough saved for retirement then, and then part of your nest egg was in your 401k that was invested in the stock market, so you kind of took a double hit. You retired before you're ready. And your investments went down at the same time. And so, you know, there are a lot of people out there, and I think that's why it's such a valuable topic to talk about. A lot of people out there who are struggling with the retirement issue now, and they've got a, you know, somebody who's 60 has retired. They've got another, you know, possibly 20, 25, 30 years in retirement.
Well, of course, there were the companies that either reduced matching contributions or they just changed or totally eliminated the matching contribution, which affects people's portfolios as well. Sandy?
One more problem is when people do retire, say at 60 or even 65, they look at that lump sum that they have in their 403B or their 401K and they think, wow, I'm rich, you know? But that lump sum has to last over 30, 40 years because of the retirement phase being so long now. And a lot of people spend way too much in those early years, right, not realizing, you know, it takes a lot of money to float yourself for 30, 40 years.
Well, but some people would say, well, as I get older, I'm not going to need as much money. You know, when I get 85 years old, I've seen people talk about they're projecting more money on the front end because as they get older, they won't need as much. Is that a good way to think about it?
Yeah, but other expenses increase, right, like medical costs and assistance costs.
Yeah, I think the just people having the right facts. There was a recent AARP study where people that had not retired yet thought they would only need about 30 to 70% of their pre-retirement income. And in our industry, experts think it's closer to 70 to 90%. So first off, it's understanding the realities of your needs. And when we do retirement planning, the hardest issue, I think even harder than predicting returns of portfolios or even how long you might live, is what are your real expenses? People don't know their real expenses. You know, they don't know how much they spend.
What should people do to accurately, you know, project those expenses? What should they do? How should they go about that?
Well, a simple budget, you know, and to keep track of those expenses, just to see what you're spending where. Quicken is a great software that's easy to do and that you could see, you know, what you're actually spending and where you're spending it from, whether it's coffee or, you know, movies or life insurance, whatever. But you can do it. You just have to take the time. But it's painful. Nobody likes doing that.
And the other piece is kind of what you alluded to. When a person retires in their early years, a lot of their income is going to be for discretionary type of stuff, you know, having fun, traveling, and that kind of stuff. As they get older, maybe they're not doing as much of that, but their expenses have shifted to the health issues.
Right.
And so it's not like their needs have gone down. They've just shifted from one place to the other.
But, you know, people want to do everything on their bucket list, you know, early on before they perceive themselves becoming frail, right?
That's absolutely true. But
now, what about my Generation Xers and Ys? You know, I hear them saying there won't be Social Security when I'm older. Do you recommend that they save more for that reality, or are they overblowing the possibility that there won't be Social Security?
They're in a wonderful position because they have an opportunity to save, to start saving early. And if you save early, the amount that you save, the percentage of income that you save can go down, significantly down. So they're in a position that they have started knowing no other structure where the corporation takes care of you in retirement. When they start out, they know that they're responsible. And so they do have a chance to save in tax-advantaged ways throughout their entire working career. And the government has gotten increasingly better about giving us vehicles where we can save in a tax-advantaged environment, like 401Ks and IRAs and health savings accounts and 529s.
And I would like to say, I think for that Generation X, there is a huge risk of Social Security not being what it is now. I don't think it'll totally disappear, but it's going to change dramatically by the time they're ready to retire. So, yeah, they really, in a lot of cases, need to plan for retirement like there's no Social Security, and then whatever Social Security they get will be treated as a bonus.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on kcur.org. I'm Susan Wilson. We're talking to the Cash Money Crew today with Alex Petrovic, Sandy Weaver, and David Jackson. We're discussing what you need to know about trends and preparing for the new retirement realities. Let's take a call from Roy of Lee Summit. Good morning, Roy. Welcome to Central Standard.
Good morning.
And you have a question about paying taxes when you're retired.
Yes. I'm in my mid-70s. My wife is in her late 60s, and we're both retired. We don't have the formal 401Ks or a retirement income, basically Social Security. And my question is, are we required to pay taxes on that, or Well, we exempt from that. I've heard it both ways, and I just wanted to ask the experts.
Well, thank you for that question, and it's a question that a lot of people who are retired have. Sandy, what's your answer to this question? I guess it depends, right?
Yes, it does depend. It depends on how much your total income is on your tax return, if you have income from other sources, and then they will tax a certain amount of it. If your income, I think it's over $25,000, then if it gets over $40,000, then they tax a higher percent. And I don't have those numbers in front of me unless you want to.
Yeah, it depends, as she said, you know, whether you have other income sources. If they have no other income sources, then the majority, if not all, of their Social Security isn't taxed. But when in doubt, you know, I would consult a professional. But if they haven't, after all these years in retirement, Roy, I'm supposing that, suggesting that he has been retired a while, if there was other income being reported on their Social Security number, the IRS probably would have contacted him by now.
Well, when you say income, does that mean income from pensions, from 401k earnings?
Exactly.
Any income that you have at that point.
Right, the interest off your CDs. If that's over $32,000, then 50% of your Social Security is going to get taxed.
Well, some people might say that's not fair because Social Security dollars have already been taxed, and it's like a double taxation. Any hope that Congress will think twice about taxing something that's already been taxed?
Yeah, that's a hot issue, but you're right. You know, fairness is not really a word that, you know, is associated with the tax code.
I think it'll go in the exact opposite direction. I think Congress will go through the back door, and like right now it's for 2013, if you made over $44,000, they taxed 85% of your Social Security. I think they're going to drop those limits and tax it harder because it's a backdoor tax. You don't see it that easily.
Yeah. So
now you have people who are retirement age who work not necessarily because they need the money, but because their life has been work and they want to continue working. But how does that affect their taxes in terms of Social Security? Isn't there a limit on how much they can work?
Well, when it comes to once you're receiving Social Security benefits, if you're not at full retirement age, you can only make about $15,000 a year before you have to start repaying some of that Social Security benefit. Now, once you reach your full retirement age, which whether it's 66 or 66 in a few months or whatever, then you can make an unlimited amount and not have it affect your Social Security. Now, Social Security may be taxed more because your income is higher, but it doesn't keep you from working and earning income.
Paying the extra penalty, right?
Right.
Now, in terms of other things that people should know about planning for retirement, what do you recommend? Are there some basic things that everyone should be doing to make sure they're prepared?
I would say, you know, on a real high level, you know, if you're young enough at this point and you're healthy, you and your spouse, if you're married, you know, you need to be looking at what your retirement looks like now. And if it is iffy, let's say it's kind of maybe I'm okay, maybe I'm not okay, then one area that you need to be thinking about is you're taking care of your health. Because if you have to work or you want to work, even if it's part-time, you better be healthy. That means so right now you could be doing one thing that is above and beyond your investment portfolio, is exercising, eating right, managing what medications maybe you're on. And because one of the detriments in that you might need to retire is maybe your spouse isn't healthy and you have to retire to take care of that spouse. So if you're young and healthy, you need to be thinking about your lifestyle now in order to have some options, some flexibility, you know.
Yes, Sandy.
I'd like to address getting the best bang for your buck when you're saving. There's sort of a hierarchy of smart things to do. Number one is to invest in your company pension plan. If you have a match, get up to that match level so you get, you know, your 50 cents on the dollar or dollar for dollar. And then after that, the second best thing you can do is save in a Roth IRA because the earnings don't get taxed when you pull it out. Third best thing you can do is to go back to your company pension plan and max that out. Fourth best is to use a deductible IRA if you can't qualify for the Roth. Fifth is a non-deductible. Annuities can be helpful if you are a very high income earner and expect to stay there. But, you know, when you're saving, save in the smartest way first and then go on down the list.
We have a question from Lee in Kansas City. Good afternoon. Good morning, Lee. Welcome to Central Standard.
My question is, if I gave each of my children so much to put into an annuity, how much would they need to have to earn about $35,000?
Wow.
$35,000
a year? Today's interest rates, a lot. Because annuities aren't paying much in income. But so we'd have to back into that with my calculator. $30,000 annually, that's a lot of money. It'd take a pretty large annuity.
Yeah.
Especially at today's low, historical low interest rates, both at the bank and at insurance companies.
1.7.
Okay.
Yeah.
At what rate?
I just used
2%.
$1.7
million
dollars.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I'm not sure if that was the question, because she may be talking about how much would she want to do every year for X number of years to get there.
But you're saying the total amount in order to
generate
that kind of money is that's a pretty high
number. Is she still on the line, Lee? Is she still with us?
Yes.
So it would be better to give them so much per year.
Yeah, immediate annuity is another source that you can get higher returns on depending how old your children are. But actually, to do you justice, we'd need more details.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, I do have a question that I hear a lot of people talking about as they prepare for retirement. Of course, housing is a big expense during retirement. So if you're, let's say, nearing retirement, do you start taking money and paying off your house? Or are you better to invest that elsewhere?
It kind of depends, really. You know, there is that dream of, you know, not having a mortgage when you're retired. But if you have enough income sources coming in and you continue paying the mortgage, it's not that big a deal. It just kind of depends on the person's situation. But I do know a lot of people who want to, before they retire, wipe that mortgage out so they keep their expenses as low as possible.
It depends on the interest rate in your mortgage. Let's say you have a mortgage of 3%. But let's say that your average rate of return on your investments is 6%. So it makes sense to keep the mortgage because you're making more on the investments.
Right.
Unless you don't feel comfortable with that, then the answer is to pay the thing off.
I would add one other item about just in general about retirement planning here as we get close to the hour. We keep talking about the need to work longer or need to have more income. One interesting aspect of the Affordable Health Care Act, or Obamacare, is that we've had clients that were pretty good shape in terms of being able to retire before Social Security, whether it's 62 or full retirement age, which is 66 or 67, but they were so fearful of whether they would be able to get insurance. So one of the, I think, positive things of the Obamacare is that as of 2014, you know, you can't be denied insurance on pre-existing conditions. And we saw it often. People, one of the spouses had high blood pressure or maybe MS or whatever. So that's a big change in the retirement planning landscape as well for people that are in pretty good shape financially, but were worried about health care.
Let's take a question from Peter. Good morning, Peter. Welcome to Central Standard.
Don't know if Peter is there.
Well, I was hearing feedback.
Yes.
Of some sort. Well, while we're waiting for Peter to get back on the line, one of my questions is, how do people determine how much to take out every year of their retirement savings while they're retired? What's a safe amount generally? What's the rule of thumb?
4 to 6%.
And it depends how old they are. If they're really much older, they could probably take more.
Closer to 6 if they're younger, 60, 65, closer to 4. So.
And when you talk about the right amount to take out, does that also mean that, does that vary with the other kinds of incomes that people have?
Well, one of the things that it varies by is how long do you think you're going to live? Because if your intent is to just live off your interest indefinitely, you should keep that percentage small. But, you know, if you're thinking, you know what, I'm not in the best of health and I'm probably only going to last another 10, 15 years, you could possibly afford to take a larger withdrawal rate, you know, if your intent is not to leave a huge nest egg to your kids and your decedent. So it does depend on where you are in life. Now, one thing I did want to add before we run out of time is one of the big things that people are fearful about is running out of money in retirement, which you alluded to. One of the ways to solve that equation in part is utilizing insurance companies' products, including some type of annuity, because you can put money in some type of an annuity with a payout stream that will guarantee that your money does not run out. And there's so many different ones out there, I don't want to get into the specifics. But because so many people do not have pension plans anymore, which creates that guaranteed income stream, sometimes using annuities to make up for that makes a lot of sense.
So that's an option people should consider in that situation. I know one of the callers asked a question about he has a federal pension, but he's thinking about shifting it over to other instruments. What do you think about that idea in general? I mean, to me, it sounds like that might be risky because federal pensions, you know, go on in perpetuity until that person passes away. Is there ever a reason why you would do that?
Go ahead, Sandy.
Okay. If it's a federal pension where he's getting a monthly check, that would seem to me to be a pretty valuable asset. I don't know that I'd be taking a lump sum and rolling that out.
I'm wondering if he's getting that confused with the thrift savings plan.
Oh, the TSP?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So where he could possibly roll that over into something else and have a few more options.
Or he could annuitize it as well in that plan.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll have to leave our retirement conversation right here for right now. I really want to thank our guests and the Cash Money crew, Alex Petrovic. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan.
Sandy Weaver, appreciate you being here.
Nice to meet you.
And David Jackson.
Hey, good seeing you again.
You can subscribe to our podcast, hear this conversation again, or access any of our previous shows from the Central Standard page of KCUR.org. We want you to tune in tomorrow as we explore living with arthritis. Up to Date is next with The Talk. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Christy Garten with Kate Baxendale. I'm Susan Wilson. This is KCUR. Keep listening.